My name is Alan Carr. I'm pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Lenoir, North Carolina. Thank you for visiting our webpage and for taking the time to listen to one of our sermons. We hope this sermon, which was preached in our pulpit, will be a blessing to you in your walk with the Lord and help you grow in your understanding of God's Word. God bless you now as you listen to the preaching of the Word of God.
We're going to talk this morning out of James 1, verses 5 through 8. About help when life hurts. James writes in verse 5, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways." We'll stop there and you can be seated. When life closes in on us and our way becomes hard, many times we respond to our trials in selfish ways. We say, "Why me, God? Why is this happening in my life? When will I ever get through this valley?" Or we say, "Lord, deliver me from this situation." The problem with all those statements, and we make them all the time, at least to God, sometimes to other people, is that they're all centered on us. But I wonder how many of us go to God and say something like, "Lord, I'm hurting and you know it. My way is hard and you're aware of it. And I need wisdom. And I need help to understand what you're doing in my life. I need your wisdom so that I might grow in this hard place." Now, we're still asking for ourselves, but we have shifted the focus off us and back on God. We're seeking Him and we're seeking His help, and we're seeking His wisdom, not necessarily for God to deliver us, but for God to help us in what we face in our life. And I remind you that James is writing to believers who are hurting. They're struggling because of their faith, and some of them are actually struggling with their faith, and they need help. He's already told us back in verse number 2 that when trials come, you and I are to respond to them with joy, not happiness, but a delight in our heart that understands God is up to something that's bigger than us, that's greater than our comprehension. And in verses 3 and 4, he reminded us that one reason we should rejoice is because our trials are being used by God to develop us and to mature us and to help us become who God saved us to be. It's hard to keep that in mind, right, when you're hurting, because we do not like suffering. But if we are saved, God is using our trials to mold us and to mature us. He's using them to teach us about God. He's using them to develop us into the image of Christ. Even with that knowledge, our trials are still difficult to bear. But listen, they have a purpose. Every pain we experience has meaning. They are not meaningless. God is using them, and they have a purpose. We're not alone in our circumstance. We have God's promise of help. We're not hurting without purpose. God has a plan to develop us, and often that plan to develop us includes the presence of pain in our lives. Now, many of you are hurting today. I know you are. By your own testimony, the things you're facing in life, the valleys you're going through, the difficulties that you struggle under are weighing heavy upon your heart. I understand that. But I want you to know that every step in your path, no matter how hard it is or how difficult, it has meaning. Now, knowing that truth still does not diminish our desire to be delivered. It does not diminish our desire to know why we're hurting. And knowing the truth about God doesn't make the trial any less difficult to bear. So what do we do when we find ourselves in the midst of pain and trial? Where can we find help when we hurt? Where do we turn when we need wisdom to handle what we are called to face in our lives? Well, James tells us. And in these verses, he tells us where to turn for help when life hurts, because there is a resource from which you and I can draw strength and direction when life is difficult and answers are elusive. There is a place you and I can go where we can find the help we need to make it through. And James tells us about that. He makes several statements here, and I just want to explore those. There's one in verse 5, there's one in verses 6 and 7, then there's one in verse 8. And I hope to get through verse 5 today. There's so much material there, and I don't want to get bogged down in it, so you help me move along. If you'll listen fast, I'll move through it and we'll get done, okay? So I'm putting it all on you today. It's up to you whether we make it or not. But James gives us, in verse 5 there, he gives us a word of wondering. How many of you wonder sometimes why you have to face what you face? How many of you walk around with a big question mark over your head because you're always wondering, why is this happening to me? What is going on in my life? Why am I having to deal with that? Well, James tells you where you can go, not necessarily for the answers to your questions, but for wisdom in facing what you have to face. And in verse 5, very familiar verse, a verse, by the way, that I want to say we often take out of context. We rip this verse out like we do so many verses, and we say, well, God has promised to give me wisdom. All I got to do is ask Him, and that applies to every area of my life. Now, I believe God will give you direction. I believe God will give you leadership. But when you look at this verse, you've got to look at it in its context. And in its context, James is talking directly about trials and about suffering. So this particular promise of wisdom has to do with our valleys. It has to do with our burdens. It has to do with our pain and with our heartache. And we really misuse it when we use it in some other way. So there are times we wonder, right? There are times when we grasp. There are times when we look at life and say, I don't know what to do. Well, this verse tells you what to do. Look what he said in verse 5. He said, if any of you lack wisdom. Anybody here lack wisdom? I mean, when you find yourself in that difficult situation, you just kind of look at it and say, I don't know what to do. I do not know how to handle this. I don't know which way to go. I don't know which foot to put forward next. I don't know how to take care of this. That's what we call a lack of wisdom. And that word means to be destitute or empty of something. It means to have none of it. And that's where we find ourselves often. We don't know what to do. When the bottom falls out, life caves in, we question our faith, we question God, we question ourselves, we question our circumstances. We simply lack wisdom. That's what we lack. And we know that we lack that, don't we? And we wish we had it. We wish we knew what to do. But I want to make a statement here. Wisdom, as James talks about it, is not simple knowledge. Because there are plenty of people in our world who have a lot of knowledge. They're extremely intelligent. They have high IQs. They know a lot of things. They're well educated. But they're dumb as rocks when it comes to wisdom. They have no wisdom whatsoever. Isn't that true? I mean, if you don't believe me, just listen to a politician for about 5 minutes. And you understand, here is a person who has a great education. And they have a very strong intellect. And yet they lack wisdom. Listen to our celebrities and the statements they're making. A lot of them are educated. A lot of them are very smart people, but they lack wisdom. But you take that on the other side. All of us know people who don't have educations. All of us know folk who don't have a whole lot of, learning in a educational sense, and yet they have a lot of wisdom, don't they? I think about my grandparents. Neither one of them was educated well. Neither one of my mom's parents. They never went very far in school. And they could both read and write and stuff like that. But as far as book learning, they didn't know a whole lot. But they had what the old timers called horse sense. They had common sense. They had wisdom. They didn't have a lot of education, but they knew how to navigate life. It's an amazing thing. It just to watch them and listen to them, they wouldn't express it in academic terms, and yet they would say things that are profound, and they would make statements that let you know, I've got a handle on this, and I know which way to go. That's wisdom, ladies and gentlemen. It's not, you can't get it from a book. It comes from experience, and in this case, it comes from the Lord. Good old-fashioned common sense. Well, what is wisdom? Wisdom is defined by the dictionary as the knowledge of what is right and coupled with judgment as to action. It's knowing something and then knowing how to implement it in your life. A.T. Robertson said it's the practical use of knowledge. I like that. That is a common sense definition. It is the practical use of what you know to be true. If you are a farmer, you know when you ought to plant. If you go against that wisdom, that's foolish, isn't it? You know what to do, so you act on that, and that shows you have wisdom. If you have $50 in your bank account, and you go to the store to buy something that's $75, and you try to buy it, that is foolish. You act on what you know. When you do, that shows wisdom. James is talking about wisdom. Not in the human sense here, but in a spiritual sense. He's talking about a wisdom that you don't get from a book, that you can't get really sometimes from your day-to-day life, but it only comes from God. Where does this kind of wisdom come from? As I just said, it doesn't come from within us. It doesn't come from around us. There's only one source of true wisdom, and that source of true wisdom is God Almighty. I think about Job. You know, Job suffered much in his life, didn't he? And I want you to be turning to Job 28. I want to share a rather lengthy passage with you. But Job makes some statements here about wisdom. Now, you think about where Job is. All 10 of his children have died. His friends have come, and instead of consoling him, they spend their time attacking him. And even some would say his wife may be giving him kind of the cold shoulder. And he is afflicted with boils from the top of his head to the sole of his feet. Job is not having a good year, okay? Things are falling apart in his life. He is in a desperate place. And really, as you listen to Job talk throughout this book, you understand that Job, like us, really doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know how to move. He doesn't know what steps to take. He doesn't have any answers for the problem he's facing. But he does give us wise counsel in Job 28, beginning at verse number 12. But where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Watch this. Man knoweth not the price thereof, neither is it found in the land of the living. Job says the answers I seek will not be found among the entire mass of humanity. And he says this. He says, the depth saith, that's not in me. It's not in me. The sea saith, it is not with me. It cannot be gotten for gold, neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. It cannot be valued with the gold of Ophir, with the precious onyx or the sapphire. The gold and crystal cannot equal it, and the exchange of it shall not be for jewels or fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia shall not equal it, neither shall it be valued with pure gold. Whence then cometh wisdom, and where is the place of understanding? Seeing it is hid from the eyes of all living, and kept close from the fowls of the air, destruction and death say, we have heard the fame thereof with our ears. God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the price thereof. For he looketh to the ends of the earth, and seeth under the whole heaven, to make the weight of it for the winds, and he weigheth the waters by measure. And when he made a decree for the rain, and a way for the lightning of the thunder. Now watch this. Then did he see it, and declare it. He prepared it, yea, and searched it out. And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. So Job tells us that you can't buy wisdom. No matter what you trade for it, you cannot have it by the goods that you have in your hand. You won't get it from the people around you. You might get good advice, but the wisdom you need when you are suffering will not come from another human being. Where does it come from? The Lord knows. And the Lord has it. And the fear of the Lord, Job said, is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. What does it mean to fear God? It simply means to reverence Him. It doesn't mean to cringe before Him as one would before a tyrant. It means that we acknowledge His person, we acknowledge His power, we surrender to His purpose, and we reverence Him as the God He is. We simply recognize God and we bow to Him. The psalmist says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So if you're looking for wisdom today, the first place, the starting ground, is to understand who God is and to recognize God for who He is and to submit yourself to Him as God. That's what you do. God, I surrender. I submit. I don't like this. I don't understand this. I don't want this. But you know better than I do, and so I submit to you. That is the place where wisdom begins. Again, Solomon said in the Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. If you want wisdom in your life, if you want to be able to practically apply the trials you're facing to your life, and grow in them, mature in them, develop in them, become more Christ-like in them, the first place to start is by acknowledging who God is. So when I'm trying to run my life, and I'm trying to make my decisions, and I'm trying to do everything I can by my own counsel, what I'm doing is I'm acting as if I were God. I'm giving reverence unto myself and to what I think I know. But when I understand who God is, I will also understand that I don't have the ability or the knowledge He does, that I cannot untangle the puzzle of God's purpose, and that He is God and I'm not. And my duty is to bow to Him and relinquish all control to Him and to trust Him to give me what I lack, which is wisdom. So it probably should go without saying right now, but I'll say it anyway. Only those who know God really can claim this promise. If you don't know God, you can't reverence God. If you don't know Him, you can't fear Him and submit to Him, and thus you can't have this kind of wisdom in your trials, and you have to try to handle it on your own, and that's a terrible place to be. Yet you and I question God, don't we? You and I question His power, we question His will, we question His goodness, we question His love for us. We forget about counting it all joy when we fall into divers temptations. We forget about how the trying of our faith worketh patience and how God is working to make us perfect, entire, and wanting nothing. But what do? When we lack this wisdom, the first step is to fear God. The second step is right there in verse number 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. That's simple. Let him ask of God. That word ask means to make a request. So when you find yourself struggling in your life, what do? Do you try to solve it yourself? Do you try to fix it? Do you try to figure it all out and try to determine why this is happening and this needs to do this and this needs to be? No. The first step you make is to fear God. Then you go before God and you ask Him for wisdom. God, I need help. I lack wisdom and I've come to You asking for it. In fact, that little phrase there, that verb ask, is in the present tense, and it's has the idea of we go on asking. It is a continually asking God for wisdom. It's also a command. It's not an option. God didn't say if you're struggling, you might ought to think about coming to Me. No, God said you come to Me and you ask. If you don't have wisdom, if you can't face this on your own, if you can't get through this, if there's no clear answer in your life, you need to come to me and you need to ask. And isn't that what Jesus said? It's a continual thing. But Jesus said, ask and it shall be given you, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. That is a promise. If you come asking, you will receive. That's what he said. And when we lack wisdom, we are to go to God and we are to simply ask God to give us the wisdom that we need day by day. Now, again, this should go without saying, but I'm going to say it again to state the obvious. Our trials should serve to enhance our prayer lives. Every trial we face should drive us to our face before God. Should it not? And if it doesn't, I'm just going to speculate here, God may leave you in the fire until it does. He may leave you there until you come to that place where you acknowledge Him and then you bow before Him in submission and say, God, I need help. He may just leave us in the pressure cooker until we get tenderized enough to come to Him and admit that we don't have all the answers. God is willing to share His wisdom with His people. And all we need do is ask for it, but He will not give it to an unwilling heart. It's true. He told the nation of Israel this. He said, I know the thoughts I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace, not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then God said, then shall you call upon me, and you shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you, and ye shall seek me and find me when ye shall search for me with all your heart. He's writing to people there that are struggling spiritually and physically and in every other way, and he says, listen, I've got a plan. And I'm going to bring you to a place where you bow before me and where you come asking. And when you ask, I'm going to hear you and I'm going to give you what you need. That's what God does. Then James says in verse 5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally. So when I come asking, what can I expect God's reaction to be? So if I'm hurting and I'm in this trial, and I don't know what to do and I can't figure this out and I need direction, I need guidance, I need to know how to make the next step and I recognize who God is, and so I come before God and I ask Him for the wisdom I need, what will God's response be? James said that He giveth liberally. That word giveth really means continually gives. God lavishes wisdom on us. He just dumps it out. That's what liberally has the idea. I didn't put that in there. It literally means generously without reservation or with singleness of heart. Imagine God, if you will, as a vast river of wisdom. And when you go to Him and you ask for wisdom, it'll be like stepping under Niagara Falls. It'll be all you can handle and then some. God is going to pour it out on you and He's going to give you what you need in your trial, in your situation. He will give you wisdom. He will teach us how to react to our problem, and He'll teach us how to act in our problem in ways that honor Him and develop us. If you never ask, you're never going to get. But if you come asking in faith, in submission to God, God's going to pour it out on you liberally. Then James says, I love this, and upbraideth not. That means he doesn't insult us. He doesn't mock us. He doesn't revile us. He doesn't reprimand us. Now, there's a lot of parents in here, and pretty much all of us had parents, I guess. And one thing parents are good for is making really crazy statements, aren't we? Like, one thing that I heard from time to time growing up is you'd do something kind of boneheaded. I'm probably the one who ever did that, but, you know, you'd do something kind of dumb. And maybe one of your parents would say, why don't you use your head for something besides a place to grow hair? You ever hear something like that? You ever said something like that? Guess what? God doesn't do that. You'll never go to God after you've dumbed up or after you find yourself in a mess. You'll never go to God and say, God, I need wisdom for this. I can't figure this out, and I need help to know how to navigate this. God will never say to you, why, you're a moron. I thought you, being saved as long as you've been, I thought you'd have a handle on this by now. You should be more mature than you are. That's not how God responds to us. He never mocks us. He never insults us. He never puts us down. He never reprimands us for coming. But what does He do? He lavishes, He pours out upon us the wisdom that you and I need. In fact, James said, "It shall be given him." That literally means as a gift of love with no strings attached. When I ask for wisdom, God says, "Here you go. Here you go." You say, well, preacher, I've been praying about this, about my problem, and I never have gotten the help I need. Let me just ask you this question. Let's just back all the way up to step one. Have you ever come to a place where you understand who He is and that He has a plan He's working in your life? And have you submitted to Him as God? That's the first step. I don't like it. I don't want it. I didn't ask for it. But you're God. And I bow to your authority. Now, Lord, give me wisdom to know how to act and react. Then you'll get it. You'll never get it. As long as you're trying to be God, you'll never get it. As long as you're manipulating and maneuvering and trying to solve it, as long as you think you're the one in control, you'll never get the wisdom you need. The first step is learning to reverence Him and then ask. I think we missed step one. I think we're all time praying, you know, God, help us here. I think really what we're praying is, God, get me out of this. It may be God's will for you to be in it. And He may want to teach you how to act and react in it, because our trials become opportunities for us to grow in the Lord. So there's a word here about wondering, why? What do I do? You reverence God and you ask. And He gives you wisdom. What He said, right? But then there's a word quickly this morning about wavering. Look what He said, verses 6 and 7. He said, but let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. Let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. So, if we're going to claim the promise in verse number 5, one thing we got to do is we got to go to God and we got to ask in faith. What's faith mean? It means confidence that God will do something. God said He would do it. I believe God will do it. And I'm asking Him to do it and I'm trusting Him to do it. But there's a problem here, right? It's got to be without wavering. What does it mean to waver? It means without doubting, completely free from doubt. Now, there's the problem right there, right? We're all the time wavering, aren't we? We're like Israel, man, where Elijah got up on the mountain and he said, how long halt ye between two opinions? If God be God, serve Him. If Baal, serve him. That's where we are. We're halting between two opinions. I believe God, I don't believe God. I believe God, I don't believe God. And we're back and forth. Well, like the guy in the Gospels who came to Jesus to pray for his son, and he said, Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. That's where we are. A lot. So God doesn't want us vacillating. He simply wants us to come to a place where we take Him at His word and we say, God, You said this and I'm confident that You'll do what You said. The help we need can only come from God. And the only way to get it is to recognize that He is God and to ask Him for it, yet we must act in faith, believing that God will do what God said He will do. Now, we have all kind of excuses for our doubt, don't we? We do. I mean, some people will say, well, we're unworthy of God's help. I'm not worthy for God to help me. Guess what? You're right. None of us are worthy for God to pay any attention at all to us. And yet when we come to God through relationship in Jesus Christ, we're suddenly made worthy. And so no matter where you are today, it is a big matter to you, and it is a big matter to God. And if it means something in your life, it means something to Him. Don't think you're not worthy of God's help. Because if He saved you intending to help you. Sometimes we say, well, my problem is not worthy of God's attention. And from our perspective, they probably aren't worthy of His. But from God's perspective, they're more than worthy. Sometimes God in His sovereignty chooses to take a great interest in matters that in the great scheme of things seems utterly insignificant. The God of the universe cares about you. We've got to get our heads around that. And understand that when He said, let us therefore come boldly unto a throne of grace that we might may obtain a grace and find mercy to help in time of need, He's talking to us. He wants us to come. He wants us to come in faith. He wants us to come believing. He wants us to trust Him, not doubting His goodness, not doubting His purpose, not doubting His power, but simply coming to a place where you say, you know, He's God. And I trust Him. And He's going to give me the wisdom I need. That's what it's about, right? So He says there in verse number 6, he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed. When we waver, you ever stood and watched the ocean? We're like those waves, you know, and the wind. If you've ever been there when the wind's blowing and it's white cap, you've got waves moving sideways and some moving forward. And that's how we are. We're blown about by the changing winds of our mind. I'll tell you what doubt does. Doubt severs our anchor. Because doubt in God's character, His promises, His purpose, and His power, it undermines faith. And it leaves us at the mercy of the storms we face in life. It causes us to be whipped back and forth between faith in God and unbelief in His abilities. And when we're slammed back and forth like that, we disqualify ourselves from receiving God's help. You see what verse 7 said? Let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. When I walk in doubt, when I have my heart on what I can do, when I put my faith and my abilities, and when I doubt God's ability to do what needs to be done in my life, God says you're not going to get the wisdom you need. Simple as that. So again, it goes all the way back, doesn't it, to step one. What I got to do? I got to reverence God, and I got to submit to Him. And when I submit to God, I understand in that submission that He is the Almighty and I'm not. And that if He made a promise, He'll stand by it. And if He made a promise, He has the power to bring it to pass. The writer of Hebrews said, without faith, it's impossible to please God. You believe that? For he that cometh to God must believe that He is. That's the first step. You got to believe He's God. And that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. Doubt slams the door shut on the possibility of God giving you wisdom. But faith opens it wide and makes you a candidate for God to give you what you need to weather the storm you're in. It's all about where your faith is, isn't it? Because really it comes down to this, it's either in me or it's in Him. Let me give you verse 8 real quick, and I promise not to take long. There's also a word here about wandering. He said a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Double-minded means to be divided in interest. It's somebody who has one eye on God and one eye on the world or one eye on themselves. It's really somebody who has two gods, which Jesus said was an absolute impossibility. No man can serve two masters. Jesus said you can't do that. He said you can't have one God here and one God here and be split between them. You can't be double-minded. Now, I read that verse and I think in my mind, I think he's talking about lost people. Because if you go over to James chapter 4, he uses the word double-minded again there, and he applies it to those who do not know the Lord. He's saying that lost people have tried to hold God in one hand while they try to hold the other in the world in the other, and they walk with this split allegiance, and it just simply does not work. But God's people have an overriding connection to Him that draws us to a deeper faith in Him over time. But is it possible for a child of God to find themselves in a double-minded situation? Sure it is. We all get there, don't we? We're all the time filled with doubts and confusions and questions and wonderings. And when we are, what happens? We become unstable. That word unstable means unrestrained or disorderly. And it really has the idea that we're walking according to our own path. And that's a dangerous place to be, right? But I found in my experience that God has a way of pulling His people back to a single-minded allegiance. You know what God knows? God knows that water boils at 212 degrees. He knows that. You say, why is that important? Well, He also knows it freezes at 32, right? What's that got to do with anything? God knows your temperature, folk. And He knows how to turn the heat up, and He knows how to turn it down to get you to do what He wants you to do. That's the scary part. So if I'm double-minded as a Christian, one thing I'm doing is I'm saying I'm kind of disqualifying myself from getting the help I need. I'm not walking in faith. I'm wavering between opinions. I'm just tossed about on this sea of life from one thing to the next, and I have no idea which way to turn. What do I need to do? I need to, number one, reverence God, recognize who He is, bow before Him, and ask Him for the wisdom I need to face this, and believe that it's coming my way. And what's going to happen? Niagara Falls is coming. God's going to give me what I need. He's going to pour it into my life liberally, generously, and I'll have the direction I seek, but not until I surrender. That is the first step. Now, I know some folk, and I'll try to hurry. I know it's getting late. We've got a couple things to do after here. I know some people think they know it all. Right? You just find somebody who's 14 or 15 and ask them. They'll tell you. They got it all figured out. They're wise beyond their years. But most of us know we don't, right? We know we don't. And especially when we're hurting. Sometimes it seems like every answer we ever had is gone. Somebody asked me about answers not long ago. I said, man, I've already forgotten the questions. I don't have any answers. The only hope I have of getting help in my life is learning to trust God and ask Him for what I need. Lord, I don't know what to do here, but I know You do. And so I'm submitting to You in this, and I'm trusting You to give guidance. And guess what, folks? He will. He will. Someone once said, a wise man learns by the experiences of others. An ordinary man learns by his own experience, but a fool learns by nobody's experience. True? What does a wise person do? They admit they know nothing. They submit to God, they ask Him for what they need, and they trust Him to give it, and when God gives it, they do it. Really, life is that simple. You say, it's far more complicated than that. No, it's not. Boil away all the junk, and it comes down to us submitting to Him, us asking Him, us believing Him, and us doing what He says do. That's really it. That's all. So, I close this message by asking you, do you need wisdom to face what you're facing? If you do, there's one place to get it. That's Him. Right? I would also ask, do you need to come to Jesus for salvation? Because you know you're not getting the answers you need. You've even tried praying and it hadn't worked out too good. Well, it doesn't really work if there's no connection. It doesn't. I mean, I know the days of landline telephones are just about gone, but hey, man, if something happened to the phone line, you picked it up, that thing was dead. There was no connection. Right? And if you don't know Christ, there's no connection to God. You have nothing. There's nobody on the other end. But there can be. Because the same God who promises wisdom to His children also promises salvation to those who aren't. And I encourage you to listen to what He's saying to your heart today.
You have been listening to a sermon from Calvary Baptist Church. Thank you for taking the time to visit our webpage today and to listen to our sermon. Please check back often for new content. We'd love to have you visit with us at Calvary Baptist Church. The church is located at 1369 Blowing Rock Boulevard Northwest in Lenoir, North Carolina. Our Sunday morning worship begins at 11 a.m., Sunday evening at 6 p.m., and Wednesday night at 7 p.m., and you would be welcome at any of our services. Thanks again for listening, and may the Lord bless you, is our prayer.